Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. For centuries, the Silk Road served as a vital network of trade roads that connected countries not only with exotic goods from around the world, but also with new ideas and stories of new cultures. This laid the groundwork for enduring intercultural dialogue and mutual learning. Now, in an era marked by rapid globalization, urbanization, and digital transformation, the importance of dialogue among countries has become even more urgent and crucial. How can we draw upon the wisdom of different civilizations to address challenges facing our interconnected world today? And what are the approaches and opportunities to foster meaningful dialogue and collaboration across cultures? Joining me today are Dr. David Bartosz, a Distinguished Research Fellow from Beijing Normal University at Zhuhai, Han Hua, President of Beijing Belt and Road Cooperative Community, and Joseph Gregory Mahoney, Professor of Politics at East China Normal University. Welcome to Dialogue. So, Professor Mahoney, I will start with you. You know, the second UNESCO Korea Forum was recently convened at the headquarters of UNESCO in Paris, where it focuses on the Silk Road and the historical aspect of the ancient, you know, cultural exchanges, exchanges between civilizations and mutual learning. Can we elaborate a little bit more on the significance, you know, of the Silk Road, where we are talking about, in particular, its role in facilitating cultural exchanges throughout history?
Well, you know, one of the really interesting things about the Silk Road and how it moves from Asia to the West, from the East to the West, is that what we really see over this massive landmass from, you know, including South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, the Middle East, Central Asia, Europe, all of these areas, even if some people, depending on how you list Russia. What we see here are multiple different civilizations, a lot of different civilizational values, societies, languages, cultures. And what we see with the Silk Road is how these different civilizations were connected with each other through time, how they learned about each other, how they fostered trade and mutual understanding. And we know that this has been very important to not only improving relations and being a key guide for us today. For example, if we look at the Dunhuang Caves out in the Chinese western part of the country, where we can see these paintings, these famous paintings depicting a certain type of multiculturalism that we are studying today in China to call upon these older Chinese experiences of recognizing and respecting different civilizations. We understand this, of course, but we also understand that people like Marco Polo traveled across the Silk Road and brought knowledge about China back to Europe, certainly helped start bringing European knowledge to China. And then later, many other pilgrimages back and forth, exchanging information, people-to-people exchanges, what is the term we would use today, promoting this sort of understanding that would allow us to live together.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, you know, if you look at the Silk Road, of course, I think, you know, in one way it's focused on this trade, you know, between different regions, countries, and cultures. And nowadays, of course, in the time of globalization, and China as the largest trading nation of goods, you know, probably, you know, people are saying again, you know, we are getting connected with each other. So, in a sense, what would you say about the lasting legacies of the Silk Road?
Yeah, I think the Silk Road, to my understanding, is kind of a backbone, so to speak, of humanity. It connects Eurasia, but also has to be understood as an extended connecting factor of what might be called Afro-Eurasia. And then, of course, in the larger framework of the Maritime Silk Road, also the Americas into that global picture or even planetary picture. And I think the most important thing that humanity has to achieve at this point is a reintegration with itself, within this world system, social system of many different civilizations, but also a reintegration of our species into the overall context of our planet, into the planetary function systems. We're talking a lot about climate change, about the atmosphere, but there are surely a lot more problems that we can only solve together. If we take a step back and look at humanity from a planetary perspective, for example, take language. There are so many words that we share. For example, the English word tea is derived from a Fujian, from a dialect in China's Fujian province. The word de, was transformed into tea or te in German. In Turkish, it's chai. It's derived from the word, the northern Mandarin dialect for word for tea in Chinese. Or if we talk about chao ke li in Chinese, this is a word that's derived from the Nahuatl language of the Aztec people in Mexico. So we are already using a lot of words. A jacket is al-jakt, yeah, it's an ancient Arabic word, has an ancient Arabic etymological root. And in this sense, also a lot of all kinds of other cultural products, artifacts, everyday objects that we use, they can be traced to various sources. So we are already, in fact, interconnected. We are not separate, because there is an osmosis between the civilizations, and we have to become aware of this. I think culture is much underrated. Cultural practices are the road to peace and the road to balance. As already ancient in China, Confucius already realized, but we have to learn to see this importance of culture from a global, shared, future-directed perspective today.
Mm-hmm. Road to peace. Well, Hanhua, you know, about 10 years ago, you know, Chinese President Xi Jinping visited UNESCO headquarters in Paris, you know, for the first time, and delivered a speech there where he laid out his vision of civilization that features diversity, equality, and inclusiveness. And last year, you know, he introduced the Global Civilization Initiative. How do you assess, you know, China's role or China's understanding and initiatives in promoting cultural dialogue and development of civilizations?
Well, thanks for having me. China's role in promoting the culture dialogues and interactions, as well as the Global Civilization Initiative, to my understanding, is very significant. And back to the China's President Xi Jinping's initiative of Global Civilization Initiative, I think it is a very beautiful evolution from the 10 years ago when he was in Paris and promoted this initiative in the very beginning, trying to align with the UNESCO core value in the first place, and to show our efforts of how this is embedded and this is intertwined with the core value of Chinese culture, that from the very beginning of Chinese culture, we are inclusive, we are very open, and the Silk Road can be a very, very vivid example. From the Silk Road and from the trade, from the very beginning in the history, Chinese people learned that China is regarded, literally translated, as a middle kingdom. But through the Silk Road, we Chinese people, ancient Chinese people, realize that we are not the middle kingdom in terms of the global context. But Chinese, ancient Chinese people are very glad to use this route to have different trading activities, including silk, including teas, including other commodities with the countries, with tribes, with other regions, including Central Asia and the beyond. And in terms of this trade, Chinese people also get spices, also get other commodities from other countries. And we export paper making, printing, gunpowders as our innovation at that time. So it is a very individual, a very independent and very individual, also interactive from the very beginning, that shows the core value of today, what we call as Global Civilization Initiative. And the Silk Roads, I'm currently in Wuhan, actually, mm-hmm. attending a Tea Road, Great Tea Road conference, which connects China, Mongolia, and Russia from the Asian times. And since China is becoming the largest trading partner with over 140 countries, we are still upholding the core value, which is inclusiveness from the very beginning, from the history, which is diversity, which enriches and empowers Chinese people and Chinese people's living standard and the livelihood in a very diverse ways. Mm-hmm. So I think down the road, China can play a more significant role in promoting global civilization initiative, to put it in a global context and in a larger landscape, where we are not only promoting, we are not only contributing, but also we get contributions from all the different cultures in the world.
Mm-hmm. I would like to also like to have your opinion, Hanhua, you know, on the recent event, which is actually an exhibition jointly held by the Palace Museum of China and the Palace of Versailles of France. You know, the exhibition focused on the exchanges between the two countries, you know, since in the 17th and 18th century. And of course, it's also a part of the effort to mark this 60th anniversary for relationship between China and France. You know, how does a cooperation project like this, you know, represent or probably the goal of promoting international relations and also cultural exchanges, you know, between China and other countries or between different countries?
Yeah, I think this is also a very good example of how China is embracing the world cultures, not only from the history, but from the current days. And just as this moment, as far as I know, there are many Chinese artists and industry players also going to the world, to different places like Latin America. We just had some, you know, artistic exhibitions in Latin America, in some countries in Latin America. And we have artists in Singapore and ASEAN countries at this moment. And we are also discussing about cultural collaborations with Middle East countries, despite the Middle East new crisis. So I think countries, just as David point out just now, culture or culture exchange can play a backbone of the diplomacy, of the bilateral or even multilateral relations in this ever turbulent world today. And we have to, and we need to promote more this kind of culture activities and exchanges to let the people know how beautiful it is from the other cultures, from the other languages, from the other peoples, so that we will, you know, uphold this idea and the value that we need to have cultural exchange for peace, not for war, not for conflicts.
Yes, different cultures interacting with each other. Professor Mahoney, of course, you know, we live in a time of globalization that we said earlier, but of course right now you can say there's a bit of retreat of globalization. You know, people have different understanding which word to use to describe the current situation. I wonder, you know, what's the effect of globalization, if there is one? I don't know whether it's positive. Largely people would say, you know, it brings people together, globalization. What about the retreat of globalization? What kind of impact that will have on, say, intercultural dialogue or communication here?
Well, I think there are a number of observations to make. The first is, you know, certainly it's increased the amount of information that we have about each other. And it's certainly, as the other guests have noted, left us in a position where we're sharing a lot of the same ideas, sharing a lot of the same words, sharing a lot of the same values. Although, of course, there's a lot of important differences and competitions that remain. Now, globalization, I think, is generally observed to be an irreversible trend. And we know that, as I've noted, that a lot of these things have been positive developments for humanity. But we also know that it has brought the world to the brink of destruction many times. And on the level of individual nations or societies, they have sometimes been devastated by cultural practices or soft power or colonialism and imperialism. I was lecturing on this very concept today in the case of Japan. Japan in the late 1800s closed itself off and radically transformed itself in ways in which it remains superficially a Japanese culture, but becomes effectively an emulator of the Western nation state model and Western imperial form. And of course, we all know the history of that. That was visited throughout East Asia and Southeast Asia and China and the, Korea in particular. That's one set of stories. There's another, which is, you know, we do know that within all the, despite all the positive cultural production and sharing, there's also an unhealthy culture of production and consumption in globalization, and certainly the products associated with global globalization, including social media, games, film, so forth and so on. That's not only contributing to issues like climate change and environmental degradation, it's also reifying how people think, degrading traditional, in some cases, much healthier cultural values and replacing them with mechanisms that can subjugate them and exploit them socially, politically, economically, instead of liberating. Now, I think that China has always been in the vanguard of trying to protect against these kinds of problems. And I think that China today is certainly trying to reach back into tradition. We have concepts like the two combinations, where we're trying to combine ancient wisdom with contemporary wisdom to help us find solutions to modern problems, and then also to share those problems with other nations who are facing similar challenges and certainly needing positive rubrics for cooperating and working together. So I think it's in this context that we can see the two sides of globalization, and certainly China's support for globalization, but above all, a healthy form of globalization where we can live and work together.
Well, that's speak of the Chinese idea, tradition, culture, David. Of course, the Chinese Global Civilization Initiative, stresses very much about dialogue, inclusiveness. Basically working together. It's a bit different. It reminds me of this idea of or the theory of clash of civilization. Because of the differences, mm-hmm. somehow, we are destined to run into each other, clashes there will be. How do you characterize the Chinese ideas? How is it how well, can we understand it, given this the global context here, the clash of civilization, for example?
I think Chinese civilization, especially ancient civilization, has a unique feature to provide, to learn from, which is related to the aspect of long-term sustainability, long-term sustainable economy, which is also related to ancient Chinese thought, in the sense that the ancient Chinese understood the universe as a whole, as they saw it, as a living process. So in the Chinese ancient worldview, there are no dead things, dead elements. So everything is intertwined as one living process of transformation. And I think this foundation, this basis that has been transformed into a modern worldview is provides a unique chance for humanity to find a certain new common denominator, also in the sense of new scientific understandings and developments, which can lead to a long-term sustainable pluralistic planetary civilization. And China has a very, very important part to play in this because of these ancient traditions.
Well, let's have Hanhua. Hanhua, of course, if you look at the Chinese way of dealing with other countries, for example, we tend to stress very much about learning from other cultures. We learn from Germany, we learn from the French, we learn from the Americans. In terms of developing the nation, developing the economy, the market, for example. Now we have done so well to the point of in some areas like industrial production. We are even, more competitive or even stronger than, Germany, than the U.S., for example, in EVs, for example, in producing this renewable energy technologies there. What is it, if you look forward, now China is not like in the, let's say 100 years ago, China was very weak, now in a more, equal position with other countries here. in terms of civilization, in terms of culture, in what way looking forward, like, you know, we can deal with each other on an equal basis and also learn from each other and be open-minded. But at a time, remember, you know, we have a sense of, for example, Washington is closing its market, building barriers, building a wall against the Chinese products. So what's the Chinese way, you know, forward in terms of a relationship with other cultures and countries here, in particular, you know, Western countries here, probably?
Well, in my opinion, while the U.S. is building its small yard and high fence or high wall, I think China needs to brave or break out into the great, the broad world outside the yard, outside the wall. This is what China is doing in terms of bilateral relations, in terms of major power competition. We do not use this word, but it's kind of a fact. It is what China is doing in terms of its further economic development and the deepening its reforms and opening up. So yes, of course, you mentioned the key word, learning. China in the history is such a good student in learning, not to mention that China learned from European countries, in its philosophy, in its, you know, constitution. China also learned from Japan about the constitutional reform in the most recent, you know, history before 1949. So Chinese people are diligent in learning. This is deep down in our, or rooted in our culture. So I think we will, and it's just we can't help but upholding this kind of core value in our culture by continue learning from other countries, other cultures, but in a different status, in a different position. We are now the second largest economy. We are diligent not only in learning but in creating, and also we upholding the flag of education for peace. So that's why we do not invade, we do not have other, we want to avoid any further conflicts with our neighboring countries, with, you know, countries like big powers. So this is kind of a formula of learning and working diligently and also creation. This kind of a formula of our success in the past, and I believe it will be a formula, not a secret one though, for the future success. But during this process, especially moving towards the future, I would say that the culture exchange is playing a bigger and more important role down the road, because when the economy and when this kind of bilateral relations is moving into this current state, and the ideology and also human rights, democracy, these kind of quarrels and debates are becoming more and more apparent and even hinder China from having or foster closer relationship with those called democracies. We have to use the culture exchange as, for example, a track to diplomacy or a way or a creative approach to show that we are not only learning from you in the past, but also we can learn more from you in the future. And also we can also working with other cultures and other countries to see how we, on the one hand, preserve our own individual cultures, and on the other side, to appreciate and to learn from other cultures, and yes, which can enhance the economic development.
Mm-hmm. Professor Mahoney, lastly, if you look at, we talked about globalization or the retreat of it, and, you know, impact on the intercultural exchanges. But at the same time, we do see there are ongoing conflicts in Ukraine, in Gaza, in Sudan, in other parts of the world, and also tension in the two big economies in the U.S. and China, for example. And also at the same time, you do sense there's a lack of, you know, the spirit of reconciliation somehow. Probably more important now for countries to have this, open-mindedness, to communicate with each other among different cultures.
One of the interesting things in the West is that one of the most influential definitions of culture comes from an American anthropologist, Clifford Geertz, who, for better or worse, and I think generally for worse, defined culture as an ideological system. And so I think, unfortunately, in the age of a great power competition that's been foisted on the world by the United States in recent years, and we at the same time we've had this return to the clash of civilizations, which you know had predated Fukuyama's end of history thesis, and now that we have the end of the end of history, it's convenient for the West to go back to this clash of civilizations idea. And to even target cultural differences as ideological differences. All of that's very much a disappointment because there is actually some strange contradictions at work. On the one hand, we do around the world all have a lot more in common than we did a century ago. But at the same time, the world has not fallen in line with this, these rather narrow and reductive notions of culture and the right way to have a political economy in terms of the end of history thesis or what predates it substantially, which is this, you know, this concept of universalism, of Western universalism. And so, you know, what we've seen with American declines, what we've seen with global problems that largely emanate from Western ways of thinking, what we see in terms of alternatives that have been created by China and that have helped lead the Chinese people back from the brink and back to the world stage, is we see that this Western, this narrow Western universalism, this narrow Western concept of culture, was not only not fit for everyone, but maybe not necessarily in its absolute sense fit for anyone. But this has, of course, provoked a conflict from the West that is holding on to these cultural values, even though they're doing so increasingly from their own ruins and trying to project those ruins on others. So I think, you know, in this context, China's saying, wait, you know, we can do better. We have done better. We have done different.
On that note, we come to the end of today's show. Many thanks to our guests. I'm Xu Qingzhuo. Thanks for being with us. See you next time.